Put me in, coach. I'm ready for the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. A podcast widely known for its generosity. And now your mileage may vary. It's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. It's a warm, sunny, beautiful morning in Arizona, and I couldn't be happier to have you joining us for another exciting and thrill-packed dive into Medicare. And it's a fairly wide-ranging dive. We have all kinds of things that could be peripherally connected to Medicare and might be engaged. we might be otherwise engaged in non-Medicare conversation. That happens very often here at the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. But the reason that we're here, as always, is to help you feel more confident about the fact that you can approach, conquer, and be victorious over Medicare when your Medicare time comes. It is not something that typically you need to be afraid of, and it's typically not something that you're going to need a ton of professional guidance on. It's always good to have a professional rubber stamp your eventual plans, and you're going to need a licensed insurance salesman to rubber stamp your insurance application for the coverages that will complement your Medicare account. But it's not always essential to ask and to pay for advice from people who are seeking to advise you about your Medicare involvement. What I suggest you do is go to barnesandnoble.com or amazon.com and purchase my book, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2024. And after having sat down with a stiff drink and a spare hour or so, and having gone through that book, you're going to find that Medicare is nothing to be afraid of. In fact, you'll be able to engage and come out victorious when your time is right. And that is exactly what I'm hoping that people will accomplish. Now, if you go to Amazon.com, you're going to find four different versions of the book in order to accommodate your particular reading preferences. You're going to find the workhorse of the whole collection. It's going to be the very nicely produced paperback book edition with black and white illustrations. That's a $9 item at Amazon. You can also get the Kindle version for your ebook reader. You can have that almost instantly, instant gratification. That's going to be a very insignificant cost. It's going to be less than $5 if that's the way you decide to go. You can buy the Audible book, which I think is around $6 or $7, and listen to the book instead of actually having to have your eyeballs do any work. And of course, if you want to actually show off, if you want to let everybody else know that you are a high roller and a big spender, what you want to do is purchase the hardcover version of the book for $24, still reasonably priced considering the quality that's built into this item. And any of those four is going to be giving you the same Medicare knowledge and giving you the confidence that you might want to acquire before you enroll in Medicare. Speaking of confidence, I have a confidential advisor sitting across the screen from me. His name is Randy Carson, and he is often violating that confidence periodically. After a couple of beers, we tend to have wide-ranging discussions on our own. So, Randy, it's good to see you up and about this morning.
Well, I'm glad to be up and about. I'm really happy. As always, I'm looking out here on this bright and sunny day in Arizona, and in my neck of the woods, it's 83 degrees. I don't know what, I mean, you're clear up in the mountains, so I don't know what you're at up there.
Well, I don't know what the weather station, I don't know where the weather station that I'm getting my reading from is located, but it says 75 here. Now, it might be that they're a little late in sending out their signal, as I often have been lately about hosting our episodes.
Sending extra signals.
Regular listeners might have noticed over the last couple of weeks when Randy wasn't supervising me that I wasn't adhering to our scheduled release dates as I should have been. So I think we're back on the horse, back in the saddle now, and I'm hoping that doesn't happen again.
We are back on the straight and narrow because I, as you know, Doug, you told me I could be the nominal producer. And if I did that, I would get paid a lot more.
Well, okay. Now, I step one, we've accomplished. You are the producer. Working on step two, so give me a little time.
Okay.
We're still making up time from, you remember when you had COVID and they hauled you off to the hospital?
Yes, in the meat wagon. Yeah.
Yeah, that was like January of 2021. And we're still trying to catch up from that time. We had several episodes in the bank at that point, and I was able to use those episodes while you were gone. It was like you never left, really. But at some point, all of the episodes were used up and I was helpless. I was sitting here completely helpless because I could not reach through the screen and operate your side of the equipment.
Was that the period that I remember there was a couple episodes you did live and you were singing? You did a 60s rendition of various songs.
That wouldn't have happened without a whole lot of hooch involved. That's the only way I ever sing or dance those two things are not natural to me.
But if you get both of those things working, there's a chance.
There's a remote possibility that has happened, but I always deny it. If anybody accuses me, I'm always the first one to deny it.
Well, that's the way, not you personally, but that's why you have to just deny. So
yeah, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes?
Yeah, that's right. We have that problem with our government, don't you?
Yes, we do.
deny. Oh, well.
Did you have a I'm wiggling my headset cord because there's a short going on there, but did you have another point to make, or should I dive right into our content for today?
I think we should dive, so I'm going to go ahead and mute myself out, and right. I will be over here doing the normal, like at the airport,
keep with it in the two flashlights with the red lenses.
Yeah, keep it in between the phone rows here. But well, yeah, good. We're good to
before
go.
Before you go, the first thing I had on top of my pile, I wanted to thank you again because I think you instituted a great improvement in our operation here. Last year, sometime, maybe almost a year ago, Randy discovered and acquired a chat feature, which he put on our website. And by the way, we're going to be working on a new, improved, and more beautiful website. That's going to be coming down the pike before too awful long, I hope. But in any event, Randy gave us a chat feature for the website. And every once in a while, somebody prefers to chat rather than fill out the very short questionnaire that we ask them to fill out. And this was a case in point. First of all, I wanted to do a couple of things today. First of all, I wanted to thank Randy for the chat feature that he found. And I wanted to also let people know that when you go to the website, if you have a question and if you're not really looking for Medicare quotes or if you just want to interact, then probably it's just as convenient for you to put your question into the chat. But all too often, I have been given a chat dialogue or a monologue, I guess it would be. And it's been kind of frustrating because when I respond, I never hear back from the person. And this is a case in point. I got an email that's automatic, I'm pretty sure, sent to me by the website. And it says, below, you'll find your recent chat transcript. And then it gives me an email address of somebody, and it's a Gmail address. So I'm assuming that it's a legitimate address. And the user of the chat said, howdy, I'm loving the podcast. Funny and informative. Well, that's very nice. Thank you, sir or ma'am. And then the automatic chat agent said, thanks for reaching out. Feel free to message us here. We typically respond in under 24 hours. Well, I respond instantly if I'm awake when I see this thing arrive because I like to interact with our listeners and our clients. So the user then said, I have a question. How do I find out if my state offers high deductible Plan G? And he said in a different statement, I've looked at ARP and I've looked at Blue Cross Blue Shield and they don't seem to offer one. So that's where the chat information ended. He, at that point, broke off the engagement and expected to, you know, get an answer from me at some point. Well, I did respond just as soon as the automatic chat feature sent me the message. And my response basically was that you have to tell me where you're located. I said, and I used the email address that was left on the chat feature. And I said, if you tell me where you live, what state, and especially what zip code, so I can tell what county they're in, because some of these things are done by county, some are done by state, and some are done by zip code. So I can figure it all out. If you give me your state and your zip code, I can figure out what county you're likely to be in. And then I can tell you whether there are high deductible Plan Gs available in your jurisdiction. And then I said, here is a little questionnaire that I'd like to have you fill out if you want me to tell you what the high deductible Plan G would cost you for your particular area. And it asks what his age is, and it asks about somebody he might live with in order to qualify him for the household discount that some companies offer. I don't ask that just because I'm nosy. I ask it for purposes of giving an accurate quote to somebody who wants a quote. And then I also ask for their date of birth. And then I ask for their telephone. And here's another question that people see on some of my questionnaires. May I text to this telephone number? The reason I ask that is because I've had my quotes or the information I provided go right into spam. And there are certain people out there who never check their spam. So my message, you know, basically it looks like I have not responded at all. And I don't want that impression to wind up out there. So I ask if I may text to the number that they provide me. And when they say yes, the only text I send to that number is a reminder that I have sent an email. And if they haven't received an email from me, they should check their spam folder. And that's all I text to anybody unless I'm asked to send more information. Sometimes people will respond and say, oh, thank you. I will look for it now. And then they'll ask me a question. We'll start a whole text conversation. But I will never use that except for making sure that you've received my quotes in the email and that if you haven't received them, that you're reminded to check the spam. So I wanted to say that the chat has a couple of good uses, and I like having it there because it's another way I can correspond with the people that are interested in how I can help them with Medicare. So moving right ahead, Randy has told me that he's going to be working on his equipment. So if you hear any banging or, you know, static, anything like that, it's going to be Randy messing around on the other side of the screen there.
Do my ears look like they're smoking?
Well, not really. Do they feel hot?
I finally found, nobody's going to know or care about this, but my system has about 47 different volume controls. And sure. I finally found the one that controls my headset volume. So now my ears should not be smoking.
Well, Randy's Mr. Geekology. He has devices and items that other people, he's on the cutting edge of technology, and some of his technology works better than others. And I remember it was a few months ago with his new headset. He's got wireless headphones, and he got up in between our recording sessions to go get another mug of coffee, and it never worked the same. It took him about a week to fix the problem because when he was out of range, when he got up and walked away with his headphones on, they disconnected and refused to reconnect to his system.
Absolutely. My system decided for whatever reason that since my really fancy wireless headset had gone out of range, it was going to be out of range forevermore.
So now every time he stands up to go get more coffee, I have to remind him, take those things off.
Take your headset off. And it works out well. There's other things that Doug reminds me to start and do also. They're on the script, so I can't speak to them, but they're there.
Yeah, that's true. And they involve some nasty poo-poo words that
that's
we
right.
don't like to podcast the nasty poo-poo words, because we want to keep them clean in case any little kids are listening to this.
Yeah,
Medicare
the family
information
version of it is turn the recorders on.
Yeah, there are a couple of adjectives in there too that are very expressive. So here's some bad news for CVS. If you're a big fan of CVS, in fact, if you're a stockholder of CVS, you might just want to divest yourself, or at least, or maybe you think it's time to go out and stake a position. So when the stock drops, maybe that's a signal to you to buy more. But CVS, here's the headline, CVS Health chops its 2024 forecast as cost struggles with Medicare Advantage persist. Their Medicare Advantage plans, or their projections, have been very overstated, very highly overstated, and they have had to reduce their projections. And Randy's making unusual signs with his, I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but it's...
That little sign means... That's a little tiny, tiny record player going, oh. I'm sorry, I'm sorry.
Oh, there you go. Yes, there. That's the equivalent of a violin, you know, playing a sad song, I'm guessing. So anyway, their stock price recently has dropped 17%, and they're blaming it in this article on the forecasts that were too optimistic that they projected at the beginning of the year. They've had to cut back on those forecasts, I think, by about $1 a share in earnings. And they had been forecasting earnings of $8.27 per share. And I think they have knocked off $1.31 per share of projections. And I'm not going to read this whole thing, but what they're saying is that the uncertainty that I spoke about in our last episode with Medicare Advantage plans, not only the reimbursement from the federal government, the pressure to change their marketing operations, not just CVS, but all Medicare Advantage plans, there is some uncertainty in that market and some turmoil coming. I think I read about three different problems with three different Medicare Advantage carriers changing benefits and preparing for tougher times ahead. We may see more of that as the year goes by. So I just wanted to let you know that things are always in flux. And right now, it seems to be the Medicare Advantage plans that are in need of retrenchment. Another subject that we've talked about fairly frequently is AI. And I found, I don't read Reader's Digest unless it's shoved in front of my face. So I had it shoved in front of my face. I don't know what issue this was. Let's see. Oh, no, this is not Reader's Digest. This is Prevention. It's a Reader's Digest article from prevention.com from May of 2024. So this thing probably came out about 3 months ago because they work ahead of time. So in the 1960s, it says, viewers of Star Trek were amazed when Leonard McCoy, the doctor on the ship, scanned a patient's body using a handheld tricorder device whose artificial intelligence quickly generated a diagnosis. Now, I don't expect Randy to be interested in this because he's more of a Star Wars kind of guy, but I am a Star Trek guy. I'm older than Randy, and I was around when Star Trek first was broadcast, although I was away at college, and we freshmen at the Alpha Tau Omega fraternity house had no time to watch television. So I actually got to see Star Trek in reruns a few years later. But anyway, so all the technology that Gene Roddenberry and whatever writers were on the show came up with was pie in the sky at the time, but has meant much of it has come to pass since then. So in this case, they're saying that the AI that was demonstrated on the Star Trek show in the 1960s, more recently, has generated some excitement, and the excitement has been tempered by a fair amount of dread. Will caring doctors be replaced by unfeeling robots, robbing medicine of the human warmth and intuition integral to healing? The only thing we know for sure is that we will soon find out. Major technology Major technological advances in recent years mean that AI is coming to medicine faster than any of us might have thought. And I've got to get my, this is a teeny tiny little page. I got to get my magnifying glass out. I feel like Sherlock Holmes here. In some ways, it's already here. It's currently being used, and we'll see a lot more applications. What exactly is AI? Oh, let me back up a paragraph. Washington University in St. Louis, AI tech budgets at healthcare companies are expected to grow to 11% this year from 6% in 2022. And while there's still plenty of worries about how AI might worsen care, this article says it's saving lives as well. What exactly is AI? The term refers to computerized tools that mimic aspects of human intelligence, learning continually over time the way people do. Siri and Alexa use AI to answer your questions, and credit card companies rely on it. Now, I don't know if you heard that, but when I said the word C-E-R-S-I-R-I, my telephone just responded to me, and it was kind of a snippy. And now, of course, Randy is talking, but I can't hear anything.
Was that a snippy little response from Siri?
That was a very snippy response. Did you hear it? Did it make it past your filter?
I didn't make it past my filters.
Okay, well, the response had to do with the fact that I am not something or other. I am an assistant or something like that.
If you ever want to get, if you know, anybody in the podcast audience, if you're a geek like I am, ask Siri stuff like, what do you know about Alexa, which is another AI? And sometimes you'll get some really snippy responses.
Yeah, I play cards with our neighbors every Wednesday night. And a week or two ago, we were playing cards, and the wife and I put I don't want to say it because she'll start yakking again, our S-I-R-I's together so yes. That they could speak to each other.
Yes, yes, yes.
And it was not a productive conversation between the two.
Just like any other husband and wife, right?
Well, there you go. There you go. I didn't say it.
I didn't say it. No, this wasn't me. This was the AI talking, Doug.
And that intelligence was indeed artificial. So back to the article. Let's see, what is AI? It is where was I? There are several types of AI. One is deep learning, which detects patterns people might miss. Another, known as generative AI, and that's ChatGPT, as I recall. I wrote down what GPT means, and it's generative something or other transform. Or transformer or something like that. It is the best known example. ChatGPT is the best known example. It uses reams of data to create new content. And my next door neighbor is always telling me, I'm going to come over and teach that thing how to write things for you so you can get more sleep. He's a wonderful guy. AI is already leading to massive leaps in research that will ultimately transform health, says an MD. Now I got to put my magnifying glass down and turn the page. AI will read test images better than people do. There are some other big ways in which the power of AI will affect our healthcare and what it may mean for your well-being. Okay, well, the content curator was kind enough to number these things. AI will read test images better than people do. Perhaps the biggest way in which AI is already being used is to help interpret X-rays, CT scans, and other images. The algorithms AI uses are very well suited to looking at an image and identifying a pattern. Studies consistently show that letting AI review images increases disease detection. Radiologists appreciate AI's assistance with reading images because two heads are proving better than one. In almost all examples, AI plus a human trumps either one alone. Oh boy, I got to get these pages. I'm loath to lick my fingers, but in this case, I think it might be called for. Alrighty. AI gave chest x-rays a first read. Images it flagged help radiologists prioritize patients with potential problems and review those scans in fewer than 3 days rather than in the 11 days that it normally takes. Other kinds of images AI is helping to read include heart MRIs and routine eye tests for diagnosis of eye disease in people with diabetes. Here's the second item that the content curator numbered. AI will diagnose and suggest treatments. Now, these are still in the early days, but AI is starting to be used to piece together information from various sources to come to smart conclusions. Ooh, I just came to a smart conclusion. I forgot to put in our spot for the ads, and we cannot give up our Christmas party revenue. So I am going to quiet down and let somebody play some advertising right now. Okay, we're back. And we're back with our AI examination in the medical field. These are still early days, but AI is starting to be used to piece together information from various sources to come to smart conclusions. Kaiser Permanente added AI in 19 of its hospitals in recent years to see whether it could predict which patients' conditions were dangerously worsening, something that can be hard for doctors and nurses to keep track of when they have many patients to oversee. By the way, does anybody out there remember the foundation of Kaiser? Kaiser was a guy who built cars, and he also built ships, Liberty ships, and some other types of warships that were used during World War II to move goods and people around. And because they had so many employees in the shipyards, they established their own health facilities, and that was the basis of the Kaiser Permanente hospital chain. Just thought I'd share that with the audience. Let's see here. We have test results, vital signs, nurses' reports, medical histories, and other factors for all the patients. Then issued alerts for any who were showing signs of decline so that their care teams could change their treatment. In more than 35,000 patients over 2.5 years, there were 16% fewer deaths in the 30 days following the alert, saving 520 lives, the scientists reported. Now, does that mean that the life was saved even if he died the following day? I couldn't tell you how they were defining the saving of life, but AI was about 70% accurate in generating a good treatment plan, healthcare giant Mass General Brigham found. It used to be Brigham and Women's Hospital. I don't know what happened to the women's hospital part, but anyway, it goes on to say one condition which AI seems to help is stroke. A summary of research showed that when doctors asked AI to evaluate patients' test results, it effectively identified some who would likely benefit from specific therapies. The best approach to disease management will inevitably include a combination of computers and doctors making such decisions. Let's see here. Now, number three, AI will identify early outbreaks of contagious disease. And number four, AI will make healthcare more efficient and patient-friendly. BJC, that's apparently one of the facilities referred to here, BJC Healthcare, is currently testing a system that uses AI in a clinic visit to document the interaction, freeing the patient to focus on, freeing the physician to focus on the patient. We're finding that it's pretty accurate, says a doctor involved with that study. AI could generate a summary of the visit in the patient's preferred language and at their reading level. Well, if the patient is in the United States, their preferred language should be English, because that's what we speak here in the United States. They can grasp the biggest concerns before they walk through the door. Experts think AI could also vastly improve scheduling. People who have found themselves still waiting for their 10 a.m. outpatient surgery at 3 p.m. know exactly how frustrating this can be. Number five, still potential problems abound. Of course they do. Among them is keeping bias with regard to age, race, gender, and sexuality from creeping into AI's conclusions. AI doesn't think for itself, but learns from past data. So a lot of the biases that are baked into how we operate in society can and will crop up in AI, says a very touchy, I'm sure, minority person. Others don't seem to care about that so much unless it affects the disease process. For example, she says, doctors' notes have revealed that some interventions aren't recommended for elderly people, even if they're healthy enough to do well. That women are assumed to overstate their problems, and that Black people aren't seen as being affected by pain as whites are. Okay, that's a load of crap. AI is also currently prone to mistakes. A recent study asked ChatGPT several dozen questions about medications and found that it gave incorrect or incomplete information nearly three-quarters of the time. Ooh, that's very, that's a little on the scary side. Another problem is that computers may be too meticulous, flagging things that won't actually cause health problems. All three experts hope that such problems will never happen, but it remains to be seen whether hospitals and practices might come to overuse AI and underuse human professionals in order to save money. There's no doubt that a massive transformation is coming. Many experts are excited, anticipating that good will far outweigh the bad in terms of patient outcomes and experiences. The technology will not eliminate the need for doctors, but doctors who use AI will replace doctors who don't. So that's a word to the wise, doctors that are looking for improvement in their techniques should be apparently using AI more frequently and watching the results that AI is going to produce for accuracy and effectiveness. And since the clock on the wall is telling me that we've come to the end, I'm going to postpone the next article I had, which is Nurses Protest AI at Kaiser Permanente. So we'll save that for another time. Randy is going to probably throw me out of here and slam the door after he shares his words of wisdom with us.
Our 75 cents is gone, Doug.
It's always about money, isn't it, with you? It's always about money.
I did look up one thing here because I really didn't know the answer to it either.
And what was that?
What does ChatGPT stand for?
So I looked it up the other day, but I forgot where my note is.
I looked it up, and it's nothing that I ever would have, dreamt up because it's such a convoluted name.
Yeah.
Anyway, ChatGPT stands for Chat Generative Pre-trained Transformer.
That's what I wrote on my note. I can't find my note. Now, if I had asked ChatGPT to tell me what it means, I probably would have gotten it faster.
It probably would have got it, but none of this. Okay, chat generative, yeah. Okay, pre-trained, yeah. Okay, I get it. Transformers, okay, that's like some sort of a toy I used when I was a kid.
Yes, but you put all that stuff together and it becomes meaningless.
Yes, we're very good at that in technology. Add all this stuff together and guess what? It's as meaningless as when you started.
Well, the fact that it exists at all, at least is a tribute to man's inventive nature. Because yep. If we can get somebody else to do our thinking for us, that leaves more drinking time for the rest of us.
Oh, absolutely. And there's one more thing I was going to point out. Now, this is very true and it's very technical. And I'm in a certain way, I'm happy that the research is going forward. But those of you who follow Elon Musk and his doings through the world, he has created a system and or company that allows you to interface with people that have no use of their arms, legs. They're basically paralyzed.
Well, yeah, that's Neuralink.
Neuralink. And there is a test Neuralink project going on here in Phoenix.
You might want to go back and listen. A few episodes ago, we spent, I think, parts of two episodes discussing Neuralink.
Have you ever seen, there's a video on YouTube, I love YouTube, of a guy interacting with a game, or I think it was playing chess with Neuralink. He was using Neuralink to play chess with a dude sitting next to him.
I did not see that. I think my reporting on Neuralink ended at the point where they had installed a link into somebody's brain and were about to test out the functioning.
Well, apparently there's another person going to undergo those tests here in Phoenix.
Okay. Well, God bless him. Well, I'm not going to be in Phoenix pretty soon, so you'll have to report on the results of that test.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I thought everybody should know. I think it's incredibly interesting because while there are really a lot of good ways to use technology, which is that particularly, in my opinion, is one of them, there's a lot of bad ways to use it, too, if you don't watch it. But anyway.
Well, this other Neuralink thing, it occurs to me that I had reason to Google and I hate to use that term because I really use DuckDuckGo, but Barry Stadler, Sadler, Staff Sergeant Barry Sadler, had at least one number one hit in the 1960s with the Ballad of the Green Berets. Yep. And the liberals and the kids roundly criticized him and mocked him. And he was a fairly accomplished staff sergeant. And he started in the Air Force, and then he went to the Army after serving a hitch in the Air Force. And he was shot in the head and became a quadriplegic, and then was moved around from one facility to another. But here's a guy who could have been a good candidate for this Neuralink. Because he was a quadriplegic, he couldn't do anything on his own, and had Neuralink been available, that sounds like it could be a way to improve somebody's quality of life if they have an injury that causes quadriplegia.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. This chess game I was watching, all the fellow had to do that was using the Neuralink product was think about where he needed to move.
Rook to pawns, queen four. That's probably not even a real order.
Nope. I don't know. I used to play chess, but I never got good at it. Just like golf.
Yeah. Same here. That's why you and I get along so well. There are only a few things that we are really good at.
Yeah. And that's not one of them.
Nope. Or two of them in this case.
I am good. I'm good at driving the beer cart.
Well, I'm always good at waving at the beer cart driver and luring them over to where I am, where usually next to a water hole or a water sand trap, or that's
absolutely
where I wind up.
Absolutely.
Listen, you ought to bring this thing to a violent end before something bad happens.
You're going to hear brakes screeching here. So anyway, long story short, there's a few things I always do before we end up, and one of them is to give you Doug's email address so that you interact with him, and it's dbj@mlmmailbag.com. Don't forget, Doug is licensed in every state of the union to help you with your Medicare supplement planning. You can check us out at the website medicareforthelazyman.com. Lots of good information there. We would also appreciate it in your wanderings through the internet if you can find a place to drop a review for us. We'd really like it. It's good for us. It's good for you. And by the way, the numbers are everything in our world. Ultimately, number four is thank you for joining us. You could have been a number of different places doing other things, and you weren't. You were with us spending some time learning some very important information from Doug about Medicare. But if you weren't checking on your watch, we have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma. No more. He's living in the high ground. And I do mean the high ground behind Cave Creek, Arizona. I'm clocking him in at about 32,000 feet today.
That's going to make it tough for me to breathe. I hope I survive till the next podcast episode. But in any event, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. If you can spare a little oxygen, send it my way, and we'll look forward to seeing you soon. Bye-bye.